Welcome, and thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to inform all participants that your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question and answer session for today's call. Today's call is also being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And I will now turn the call over to Ms. Marion Hunter. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining our call today. My name is Marion Hunter, and I'm a Public Relations Coordinator for the Virginia Department of Health, Office of Communications. Today, we're joined by the Virginia Department of Health, Office of Epidemiology, Public Health Physician Specialist, Dr. David H. Trump, MD, MPH, MPA. Our subject matter expert will give a PowerPoint presentation on serology testing in Virginia, followed by a question and answer session. Today's call is being moderated by an operator. So when we get to the Q&A portion of the call, please follow their instructions to ask a question. Now, I would like to welcome Dr. Trump to share an update on serology testing in Virginia.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I'm Dr. Dave Trump. And just to get it on the record, I am not related. Just a brief background. I am a career public health physician, over 30 years of practice in public health and preventive medicine. First with the U.S. Navy, and then after my retirement, I served the Virginia Department of Health as the health director for the Peninsula Health District in Newport News up through Williamsburg, then as state epidemiologist, and then finally as chief deputy commissioner for public health and preparedness before retiring in 2016. I returned to work with the health department here in the Office of Epidemiology at the end of April. The briefing this morning is on antibody testing for COVID-19 in Virginia, and we'll do some brief background on antibody testing, what it is, what are some of the limitations, what are some of the roles, then talk briefly about the antibody test results that the Virginia Department of Health has received to date, and then spend a fair amount of time talking about the Virginia Coronavirus Serology Project, and followed by some other antibody testing projects that the health department is undertaking over the next several months. Just briefly, antibodies are our immune system's response to an infection, whether it be a virus or a bacteria. The immune system makes these proteins that, in this case, will bind to the COVID-19 virus. Through their binding, if they bind in the right spots and tightly enough, they'll keep the virus from getting into cells. And also, if they coat the virus enough, it makes it easier for other immune cells to come in and sort of deal with the invader. This is something that happens during any infection. It's not immediate. And as a result, antibodies are not reliably detected through testing until about 2 to 3 weeks after the onset of any infection. Antibody testing, or the other more general term is serology testing, is of use in COVID-19, but there are limitations. First, when we talk about antibodies, we're really looking for indirect evidence of a past infection. It's not the test that we use to diagnose a current infection. For that, we need the viral test, the PCR test, done on a nasal swab sample. Also, right now, we don't know some things about the antibody testing. We think we know some, what's likely to happen based on our history with all other infectious diseases, but we don't have the evidence to be confident that the antibodies that our tests are now detecting do protect against reinfection. How long that protection would last. We know that antibody protection often wanes or weakens over time. And then we also don't know that if you get reinfected after you've had an initial infection and have antibodies, if those antibodies will help the illness be milder. And probably more importantly, we don't know if you're reinfected, will you be contagious again and likely to spread virus to others. So there are lots of questions and lots of people who are looking for answers to those questions, and we'll know more over the next several months. But those are the current limitations on antibody tests and how we need to think about them. One thing we do know about any test is they're not perfect, and we do have to think about which test to use. Currently, the Food and Drug Administration has approved 16 antibody tests under emergency use authorization for use in the United States. And they have a range of performance, and test performance uses terms called sensitivity and specificity. And the sensitivity is how good the test is at finding a new infection. The specificity is how good the test is at calling a negative a true negative. In this example, the infographic that you may be able to see talks about what happens if we assume that 5% of the population have had a COVID-19 infection and we test 100 of them with a test that has 90% sensitivity and 95% specificity. That 95% is an A in most grade books. But we find that if we apply that test in 100 people, we'll find the 5 out of the 100 who had the COVID-19 infection, but the test will tell us there are another 5 that are positive. So 1 in every 2 positive results is what we call a false positive. And that's a big reason why we can't guarantee that a positive test result means that you actually have the antibodies and actually have protection against COVID-19. Now, if we pick a different test, now a test that is 99% specific, you can get that false positive rate down to maybe 1 in every 5 to 6 positives. Still not 0, but it's better than if we had chosen the test with 95% specificity. Tests aren't perfect, and we also have to think about who we test. On the left, if you see the infographic, is that same example where 5% of the population, we think, had the infection, and our test is finding 5 positives and 1 person, most likely, who is false positive. But if we assume that only 1% of the population had COVID-19 infection, apply that same test, we'll now find that 1 person who was infected in the past, but will still have 1 false positive, and we're back to 50% of the test results are potentially false positives. And the challenge is we can't tell patient A that their test is a true positive or a false positive. Right now, that is the unknown of any antibody test result. So there are limitations to antibody testing for COVID-19 right now, but they do have value. One is in clinical care, where a physician, as part of working up a patient who's presenting with COVID-19-like symptoms, may want to do the PCR testing and an antibody test, especially if that person is coming into care late in their illness when the PCR test may not be picking up virus, and the antibody test would help make a diagnosis. A doctor could also use an antibody test if they're looking at someone who has a new health condition or has a change in their existing condition, and they give a history that they had fever, cough, or other symptoms that could have been a COVID-19 infection a month ago. They can use an antibody test to help make a diagnosis in that patient to help their decisions about the patient and how the current condition should be managed. We also use antibody testing to look for individuals who could serve as plasma donors for therapeutic antibodies, people who've had infection in the past and whose antibodies could be used to treat a currently infected person. There are also roles for antibody testing in public health as part of our investigating cases. We now call a confirmed case anybody who has a positive PCR or a viral test, but we can use an antibody test to classify someone as a probable case, as long as they also have either a history of the clinical symptoms of a COVID-19 infection or they were in a setting where they had a high likelihood of being exposed, like in a nursing home outbreak. The other place we could use those antibody tests is along with PCR tests to look at an outbreak, such as in a long-term care facility or workplace to understand the true full impact of the COVID-19. And then finally, there's a role for using antibody tests for the purpose of seroprevalence assessments. And that's what we would test a defined sample of the population to get an estimate of those who have antibodies and hopefully an indicator of those who've had a past infection, including those who may have had symptoms, but more importantly, those who either had no symptoms or maybe had a very mild illness and never required or came in to get a PCR test. So what do we know about that background rate of infection in Virginia, that seroprevalence, how many people have been infected either diagnosed with a PCR test or had an asymptomatic or a mildly symptomatic illness? And really now we don't know. To date, BDH has received over 50,000 antibody test results really in the last 5 weeks. What we're reporting on here are all of those that have received approval for use by the Food and Drug Administration. And of those 50,000 tests, 5.5% are positive. Now, some of those are among people that we already know are confirmed cases, people who had a PCR test that's positive and also have an antibody test that's positive. Others are individuals who have been classified as a probable case, and they all, and either based on clinical symptoms, exposure setting, with the antibody test result. And so if we take those cases out of the mix, we get a number of about 2.5% positivity among those who are not cases, those who have not been counted yet as cases here in Virginia. That's probably the best guesstimate right now about what the background rate of infection may be in Virginia. But as you recall, we don't know whether half of those are false positives or maybe 15 or 20% are false positives. And that leads us to the Virginia Coronavirus Serology Project. And that is a statewide project whose purpose is to really get an estimate about what percent of the adult population have antibodies to the virus that causes COVID-19. As that indicator of people who've had either previous infection and were symptomatic or were asymptomatic. And to get an estimate that is for Virginia overall, but then also an estimate of are there differences among the five health planning regions here in the state. The Virginia Coronavirus Serology Project will be enrolling 5,000 adults statewide, 1,000 in each of the health planning regions. The sample size, that number is required to get an estimate that's relatively precise, plus or minus 1%, if we make an assumption that we're testing in a setting where about 2% of the population will have some evidence of past infection. The project is doing this through enrolling adults who are seeking care in laboratory services in health systems' existing locations, their outpatient clinics and lab collections. We have enrollment quotas so that we are seeking representation of the region's population by some broad age categories and also race ethnicity categories. Within each of the regions, the locations that are being chosen are going to provide some diversity by geography and by the population served regionally. The project involves getting consent for participation, having the individuals complete a short questionnaire, and then have a blood sample collected. Those blood samples will be sent to a single laboratory that is running an FDA-authorized test that is reported to be 100% sensitive and 99.6% specific. That timeline is for enrollment in early June through mid-July. We actually have begun enrollment this week very initial, and we'll have that increased enrollment over the next several weeks. And the goal is to have at least a preliminary report no later than July 31st to inform decision making that will occur over the next into the fall of this year. To conduct the project, VD8 has entered into agreements with the University of Virginia for the project management. Dr. Eric Helpt, who is a professor of infectious disease with UVA, is the project leader. UVA will be doing the laboratory testing and also will be responsible for enrollment for the Northwest region. The other enrollment locations or partners are Inova for the northern region, Sentara Healthcare in the eastern, BCU for central, and the Carilion Clinic for the southwest. Excuse me. There's no single way to do a serology project of this magnitude, but we do feel this the results for what's being conducted here in Virginia have some strengths. We are seeking to be representative by age groups and race ethnicities, again, statewide and at the regional level. By using the outpatient clinic settings, we're approaching individuals who've already made the choice to leave their home, to be out and about, and they have also gone through whatever health care, health screening is in place or needs to be in place for that setting to make sure that, the risk of an individual having COVID-19 is low. We've also been able to partner with the site's existing clinical studies staff who are experienced with approaching and working with individuals for this sort of enrollment and also the existing blood draw services at those facilities. One potential limitation, but also I think it is a strength of this project, is we are most likely going to have higher participation of individuals with chronic health conditions because we are seeking people who are in a healthcare setting. The strength is that this is a population, people with diabetes, with chronic heart disease, pulmonary conditions, who, if they do become infected, are going to are more likely to have a severe illness, more likely to require hospitalization, and also more likely to have complications from their infection. And we really need to know for communication with the public and also for healthcare planning what percent of that at-risk population still has had no experience with COVID-19, so we have better information on planning for the next several months. There are definitely some weaknesses with this approach. We are unlikely to enroll enough people from each specific health district or county, for example, to have reliable estimates of what the experience has been at that local level. Because we are in healthcare settings, we will represent individuals who are uninsured and underserved. And the current project is not enrolling any children and youth. So that leads us to some other work that the Virginia Department of Health is doing with regards to antibody testing with serology. The health department is analyzing and deciding how to best present those antibody tests. Those antibody tests that have been reported to date, so that those can be available publicly on the COVID-19 dashboard. And then the health department is also working to add capacity for antibody testing in the future. I mentioned, that we're going to not necessarily have a picture of what's going on at a very local level with the statewide project. So there will be build capacity, so there will be opportunities to do smaller studies involving maybe 200 or 300 individuals at the community level, whether that be a community of color or otherwise underrepresented population or a particular rural community, to get a better picture of what has been going on with COVID-19 in that community. We're also looking at adding capacity, so we have antibody testing as a tool for outbreak investigation and potentially management of populations in that settings like long-term care. We're exploring the opportunity to do our child and youth serology project, probably in just one region of the state. And then as part of that is working with the Division of Consolidated Laboratory Services to support their addition of antibody testing capabilities. Just to put this in context, the serology work that I described is important work for the long-term response in Virginia to our long-term understanding of COVID-19 and for having the tools to best inform you and the public about what is happening with this infection among the peoples of Virginia. It's important, but it's not the urgent part. The work on serology projects is in addition to what is the important and urgent work of finding current infections of COVID-19, identifying those individuals through PCR testing, and expanding that ability for testing, and in particular, expanding the ability for contact tracing and being able to advise individuals to minimize the spread of the infection from one person to the other. So after that, having heard about the limitations and potential uses of an antibody test, what do we do with a positive antibody test? What is the recommendation for someone who has been tested for whatever reason and has a positive antibody test? Right now, the recommendations are you continue to follow all the general recommendations already in place. Uses a mask, social distancing, avoiding crowded conditions, both in general and then also in particular workplaces. Antibody testing, a positive result, directs no change in the actions if someone presents with a symptom that could be due to COVID-19. Again, we don't know if antibodies are a guarantee against reinfection, so they would need to take measures to limit their infectiousness to others. PCR testing may be necessary. A healthcare worker who is antibody positive should have no change in what they're doing in their clinical practice or the use of personal protective equipment for healthcare workers and first responders. A positive antibody test should not be used to make decisions about living conditions for people residing in or being admitted to any congregate setting, whether it be a long-term care facility, a school, a dormitory, or a correctional facility. And then also, a positive antibody test is not used to make decisions about whether a person should or should not return to work. And those are the currently published CDC guidelines for COVID antibody testing. With that, I thank you for your time, and we'll open up for questions here briefly.
Okay, before we begin the question and answer portion of today's call, I want to remind you that our call is focused on serology testing. For questions regarding other topics or if our subject matter expert is unable to answer your question today, please direct them to the Virginia Joint Information Center at covid19jic@vdem.virginia.gov. We will have a copy of this PowerPoint presentation along with the MP3 audio and transcript posted on the VDH website. We are now ready to begin the question and answer portion of today's call.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please ensure that your phone is unmuted, press star 1, and record your name clearly when prompted. Again, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. One moment while we wait for questions to come in. One moment for the first question. Our first question is from Alan Suderman. You may go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Trump. Are other do you know of any other states doing a similar serology project, or are we the only one you know about? And sorry, I have one other question. If someone is tested positive, would testing them again, like multiple times, to make sure it's not a false positive, would that have any, is that something you've considered?
Those are both very good questions. There are several other places that have already reported on seroprevalence assessments that they have done. Santa Clara County and Los Angeles County in California, obviously, Indiana State, and then New York has done several surveys. Some of those are, I think only one of those has been reported in a medical journal online, in the Los Angeles study. The others, there are news reports about those. There have been other efforts, and I'm sure there are other efforts going on now that are sort of in the stage we are of being planned or implemented. The New York ones are probably are informative. The most recent one, they tested over 8,000 individuals and found differences by borough. The news reports were 40% positive rates among the people they tested in the Bronx compared to a lower number in Staten Island. I think it was 20% overall. The approaches have been different. Some have used Facebook advertisements to recruit people. Others have gone to grocery stores or other shopping locations and recruited people who were interested. The most recent New York City project worked trying to identify high-risk populations, underserved populations, worked through local churches. Again, as I mentioned earlier, there are different ways to do this, but that's some examples of the work that's underway. The Centers for Disease Control is also doing some more focused work, and I know the NIH has announced a study that they're doing, mainly looking at children through some connections they have with those patients nationwide. So that was number one. Number two, there are ways to get a better true positive result, and what you mentioned is testing a sample twice is one of those. We've not made a final decision, but I suspect as when we get to the end of the project, we will retest the positives to see with another assay, different laboratory, a different test, to see how those two tests agree. And that is a very common approach to working with antibodies, for many infectious diseases, HIV infection, being an example where you do a screening antibody test and then other tests once you get that to make a decision about, what is the true infectious status of the individual. Again, thank you for the question.
Thank you. The next question is from Luann Rice. You may go ahead. Luann, your line is open. Can you make sure your mute is off?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was muted. I had two questions. One is whether the participants will get the results of the testing. And the other is you had mentioned that you've had results for 50,000 of the antibody tests. And I think you had said the percentage positive was in the 2% range. Is that across all of the health regions, or are you seeing a different rate already in the different health regions?
Remind me of the first question. I've already forgotten. Sorry.
I'm sorry. The first one was really unrelated. It was whether those who participate in this study will get the results of the test.
Right. Yes, the individuals have the option to, opt in to get results. We expect most of them will be interested in those results. And they'll be mailed to the individuals probably 2 to 4 weeks after the sample has been collected. we're going to be having these sent from the different sites to the single lab at UVA once a week, and we run in batches. So it's not an immediate test, but yes, they'll get the results if they are interested in them, and definitely we'll get an explanation about what a positive test result or a negative test result means, and what the public health recommendations are for your actions as a result of that information. And then, as I mentioned, it really has been over the last, the last 4 weeks that the state has gotten this influx of antibody test results, and that the analysis is underway, again, to figure out what they're telling us and then also how to best present them. So I do not have the information right now about how those, how the rates are varying by state or by any other information, age group or anything like that. When we're ready to present that and share it, it probably will be through the COVID-19 dashboard. But I don't know what that timeline is at present. The work in progress.
Thank you. At this time, there are no further questions. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. One moment to see if we have any further questions. There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, I want to thank you all for joining our call today. As a reminder, there will be a digital copy and transcript of the call, along with a PowerPoint presentation posted on the VDH webpage. That will be under the VDH COVID-19 webpage on the Media Room tab. Thank you again for joining our call.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.